CinemaJaw is brought to you by VitaminsFoodGuide.com, your online guide to vitamin health. Check out more at www.VitaminFoodsGuide.com.
You're listening to CinemaJaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at CinemaJaw Studios in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Rye, the movie guy, and this week on CinemaJaw, Matt, we take one last trip to Middle Earth. We put on our hairy feet one last time as we cover our favorite scenes from The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit films.
I brought my mithril armor, Ryan.
How nice of you.
So your words can't pierce my heart. As they usually do each week.
Now we got to get you some pants.
Pants optional in Middle Earth.
Me and Matt actually got out and caught the latest installment of The Hobbit, so we got a full review of the last Hobbit film. It's called The Battle of the Five Armies. Did you like that title?
Yeah, it was a retitle, right? What was the original?
I forget. Throw it in the jaw box. Right off the bat, let's throw that in the jaw box. Yeah. I'm not positive if there was a title before The Battle of the Five Armies or not.
Okay. I think there was, but okay, we'll find out.
So we have a review of the latest Hobbit film, plus me and Matt are going to take a trip, like we said, back to Middle Earth and cover our top three favorite moments. I mean, I thought about this long and hard the last couple of days. Yeah. Top three favorite moments from Peter Jackson's Middle Earth.
Yep.
Six tet, if you will. I mean, there's six films now.
From Mordor to the Shire.
It's going to be interesting. Yep. In addition to that, we also have a review of a Reese Witherspoon's newest film, Wild, getting a lot of Oscar buzz and award buzz, so we got a review of that. And
sweet.
Also, Yourself Verts Elias, as we're nearing the end of 2014. Why not look back at the year and look at the flops of 2014?
Oh, the turkeys?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. There were plenty of them.
You know, I think we'll have to throw this fact into the jaw box as well. I think I have a perfect record against Elias in trivia. I've never been beaten. We'll have to get the facts.
Throw it in the jaw box. All right. I'm 100% you're wrong on that.
No,
for sure.
I'm pretty sure I'm undefeated.
What are you talking about?
Undefeated.
All right. The guy's an absolute jackass.
I'm undefeated.
I would actually say Elias has probably won 90% of the time, but we'll throw that in the jaw box.
Undefeated.
You're taking Elias on in 2014 flop movie trivia.
Okay.
And also, in addition to all that, if that wasn't enough, Matt is making a public apology for a statement he made on CinemaJaw.
That's right.
Wait for it, Jawheads. He's been called out on Twitter, and we'll get to that as well, and it ties in with this episode.
I just hope the fans can forgive me.
I hope so as well.
Okay. We'll get to that.
So without further ado, Matt, we get into our review of the latest Hobbit film, Battle of the Five Armies. And this review is brought to you by...
PremierBoxBreaks.com.
Tell me more.
A box break is an event where a breaker will open a box, case, or pack of collectible trading cards for individuals or groups of people during a live feed broadcast so everyone can see and share in the excitement of the event. This type of service is a cheaper way to potentially get high dollar or rare cards without having to buy a whole box or case. Plus, their break list app lets you see exactly the status of the breaks that you may have bought into. To view live breaks, simply click on the homepage and the feed is embedded about halfway down the page. They will be breaking anywhere from 2 to 4 nights a week, depending on the amount of sold-out breaks for the week. Check out more at www.premierboxbreaks.com. And we thank them for their support.
Thorin, you gave a promise.
You brought upon them only ruin and death.
You've won the mountain, is that not enough?
Now, we defend it.
I came to reclaim something of mine.
Last move in a master plan. A plan long in the making.
These bats are bred for one purpose. For war.
Leave Sauron to me.
Bilbo is ready.
cannot see what you have become. Everything I did for them. You started this. You will forgive me if I finish it.
When faced with death, what can anyone do?
I will not hide. When others fight our battles for us!
You have but one question to answer. How shall this day end?
Peter Jackson's final installment from Middle Earth leaves the Hobbit trilogy on a high note. I am not sure if Jackson took notes from disgruntled fans or finally ran out of material to stretch. Either way, Battle of the Five Armies has the shortest runtime of any quote-unquote ring film, clocking in at 2 hours and 20 minutes. I mention this, Matt, because I think it truly helps the movie. The film opens with an amazing action sequence that sees Smaug burning the village of Lake Town. No spoiler here. Smaug's death, let's be honest, on screen was fantastic. For a series that seemed to stretch out every scene, including the dinner party at Bilbo's in the first film, the opening Smaug sequence was not long enough, in my opinion. From there, we see the dwarves, led by Thorin, take back the Lonely Mountain and the riches inside. However, this changes Thorin, and it clouds him. Step in our hero, Matt, Bilbo Baggins, who comes up with a plan to get Thorin to see that he has turned his back on promises he has made. Just in time, too, because there is a battle brewing outside between dwarves, elves, orcs, bears, trolls, wizards, and whatever else Middle-earth has to offer up. We have seen these massive battles before in the Lord of the Rings films, and that does, in a way, take away from some of the fun of the astonishing visuals we were getting. But I was still engaged in the action. I finally, in these Hobbit films, felt a connection to the characters, something I was missing in the first two movies. I'm not sure they could have cast a better Bilbo Baggins. Martin Freeman nailed this role. The ending of the film had to evoke memories of the Star Wars prequels, in my opinion, as it connects the Hobbit story nicely to the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Ultimately, though, Matt, I wish Peter Jackson did not turn the Hobbit book into an 8.5-hour, 3-film set. That said, Battle of the Five Armies was my favorite Hobbit film, but still not close to the greatness of the first three Lord of the Rings movies. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, a solid 3 Jaws.
I think that is a very astute review on your part. I would give it 3 Jaws as well, right out of the box. I'm going to say that. Right out of the jaw box. The thing, I agree that I was thinking Star Wars prequels the whole time, and I think one of the comments I made to you after we saw this was, it's very much like the Star Wars prequels in the sense that the original 3 Lord of the Rings movies, while they of course had some amazing CG effects, still used miniatures, and for some reason it just felt more real. I mean, obviously it's a fantasy movie, but if it can be said, it felt a lot more realistic. And then you go to the prequels, if you will, the Hobbit story, and it just seems like a complete departure from reality. Like there was absolutely nothing that tethered this to, like, I believe that the actors are standing on real ground. You know, it could have all been filmed on a green screen, and it probably was. So I think that, you know, and that's a similarity between the original Star Wars films and the prequels. So, and the other thing that was playing through my head the entire time I was watching this movie, are you familiar, and you probably are, with the animation, the Lord of the Rings animation, the Hobbit?
Mm-hmm.
I remember watching that as a very little kid, you know, when Smaug dies and Bart fires the arrow. And the whole time I was watching it, I just kept thinking of Leonard Nimoy's Bilbo Baggins, the ballad, because he narrated it and sang that song. It's pretty weird.
As you mentioned, because you bring up that scene, the death of Smaug in this film, and I mentioned it in my review.
Yeah.
Quite spectacular. One of the great moments of Peter Jackson's six films.
I would definitely agree. I mean, that whole scene where Smaug finally lays waste to Lake Town, and he's just like, you know, breathing napalm. It was so great. And, you know, he lands and he's kind of like walking across the town on his wings and just crushing buildings. And then he has that little soliloquy with Bart, the bowman. And he says, "I am death," you know, and like it's Cumberbatch's voice.
Yes, Benedict.
So good. And then, of course, the arrow flies. And I'm not giving anything away, because even if you know exactly what's going to happen, just seeing it is so spectacular.
That's why I mentioned it's not a spoiler. We know that Smaug dies, and it actually happens in the first probably 25 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, that is not the big climactic moment, so we're not spoiling anything. This happens early, and I thought it really kicked the film off with some adrenaline.
Yeah, some fireworks, man. And Stephen Fry's character, I won't say what happens, other than to say that you will be satisfied with his comeuppance, I think. But it was a nice little treat seeing Stephen Fry, which is really probably the only performance in the Lord of the Rings films that you could call a cameo. Even, of course, there have been big stars like Christopher Lee and Ian McKellen, but obviously they're principal actors. But Stephen Fry, that was a cameo, right?
I guess it was.
Well, whatever you call it, it was definitely cool to see Stephen Fry, and his character was sort of loathsome. And speaking of loathsome characters, I think there was one loose thread that really bothered me.
Okay.
And in fact, I think...
I love these loose threads, Matt.
If there's one thing that I took away from this movie really feeling disappointed about, they have this whole character, and I can't remember the character's name. Throw it in the job box. He's the master's assistant, and he's present throughout the entire film. He's sort of this weasel character that nobody likes, and at one point he actually dresses as a woman to avoid going to battle.
And he has a unibrow, which...
Yeah.
The unibrow is tough to pull off.
It is tough to pull off. And everyone hates this guy, but for some reason they keep giving him like positions of authority, like, watch these people, don't let them leave. And of course, like the next 5 minutes, they're all gone.
Right.
You know, like, well, why did you trust him again, you know? And then you keep thinking, okay, there's going to be some resolution. There's going to be some message here, some sort of lesson. Nothing. Nothing. No resolution, no satisfaction from that character. What was he doing on the screen? It was a complete waste of screen time.
Couldn't agree more. And two, you actually thought that he may possibly be...
Wormtongue.
Remember, you were like, "What is that what they were alluding to?" And I wasn't positive. So throw that in the jaw box. By chance, was he Wormtongue? And I don't know if Elias can find that fact. I have no idea.
I don't either. Yeah, I don't... Maybe he's Wormtongue, but that's the only thing I can think of, because obviously, at this point, the Jawheads will know what we're alluding to is he gets away in the end, and there's no satisfying ending to his arc.
Right.
Whatsoever.
So when I watched this movie too, Matt, I finally felt, like I said, a connection to the characters, and it made me feel good about the Hobbit trilogy in a way. And now that it's all closed and it's all said and done, I pose this question to you. Lord of the Rings, the first three films, mm-hmm. obviously epic. Where do you see the Hobbit trilogy comparing to the Lord of the Rings films? Is it going to have that sort of epic feel, or is it going to be viewed as the prequels of Star Wars?
I think the latter. Honestly, I think they're sort of love letters to the fans, and everyone agrees that it did not need to be three movies. They clearly did that. It was a studio cash grab, and it was kind of, I don't want to say slimy, because I think Peter Jackson did a good job with those movies. He did. They were good, and that's why I put them with the Star Wars prequels, that even though we have sort of this love-hate relationship, there's love in there. So they're good movies.
So... grading the trilogy, which mm-hmm. is tough to do because we just came out of the third
sure.
film a mm-hmm. day ago. I would say Lord of the Rings, A+.
Mm-hmm.
Agree?
You're saying the whole trilogy?
Lord of the Rings, the first three.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
The Hobbit films, and this is tough to do because I really thought about it last night. I'm going to give it a B, just a B, maybe even a B-, to be absolutely honest.
Yeah, B-.
You're in my category here?
Yeah, well... it just bothers me that there's three of them. It really does. They could have got this done, and it would have been great if they just did one, like, 3.5-hour epic film. How much cooler would that have been?
Awesome. I agree. Or, like I had mentioned when we came out of the screening, two 2-hour movies would have been a nice bookend to the...
Sure.
but perfect. You know what I mean?
If you needed to break it up, two would have been just fine.
Yeah. And here, as I mentioned in my review, for all the stretching that Peter Jackson does, he finally gets this awesome segment sequence with the death of Smaug and the burning of Lake Town. And I felt it was rushed. Did you feel the opening was a little bit rushed?
No, I didn't.
No?
No, at least not while I was sitting in the seat. Now that you mention it, in hindsight, they could have spent a little more time on it. But that's really almost secondary to the plot of the story. So I think he gave it enough time.
On to the finer points of the movie. I have a couple notes here, Matt, and I wanted to ask you your opinion on these. There is a fantastic, one of the, might come up on my list later in the show. Legolas is on a bridge.
Yeah.
And there's been a few moments with Legolas throughout the series where it's borders on almost cheesy because it's so cool. This one has a lot of CGI, obviously.
Oh, yeah. I don't even think Orlando Bloom showed up that day. He's like, hey, guys, what are you doing? Hey, wait a second. That's me in a computer screen.
It reminded me a little bit of the first time that we saw in the second Matrix film, we saw Neo fighting like a thousand Agent Smiths. And it was clearly...
That's a great comparison.
It was clearly CGI...
Legolas.
I was going to say in this one, Neo. But yes, same. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. I do. And you know, I'm glad you brought that up because there was honestly a couple of points where I think the CGI kind of failed. Like it did not live up to the perfection that we saw in the Lord of the Rings films or even the first two Hobbit films. I think they rushed this one. I really do. There were some awkward scenes where they were riding CGI creatures and you could just tell that it was completely fake. Anyway, that being said, the particular scene you brought up was a little over the top. While it was a lot of fun,
right?
He's literally defying physics at some at some moments,
right?
So it was kind of like, okay, you're really beating us over the head with this thing.
I think Super Mario in Super Mario Brothers, where the bridge is falling and he's still jumping on fallen bricks to get up. It was quite spectacular. Hey,
and I'm no physicist. Maybe I'm wrong here, but I don't think you can do that in real life.
You think you would just fall?
I think you would just fucking fall at that point. Although, you know, have you ever seen that slow motion thing where they let go of the slinky and it goes all the way down until it hits the bottom? The bottom does not move right away. Have you ever seen this?
I have not.
Okay, so if you're holding a stretched out slinky and you let the top go, the bottom will stay suspended exactly where it is until the top gets to where the bottom is, and then the whole thing falls.
So perhaps Legolas could fall.
You know, perhaps. I'm no Mr. Wizard. I don't think so, but it was whatever. Regardless of that, it's cheesy. It was just a little cheesy, although still kind of cool.
There was a scene also I wanted to mention that Thoron was obviously obsessed with the riches and he's inside the lonely mountain and he doesn't want to deal with anybody and he's going back on his promises and it's quite literal. He's on a gold floor, which according to you, when you read the book, the gold floor was actually made by
Smaug. At one point is trying to kill Bilbo and he melts a whole bunch of gold and that's solidified and that is the floor he's standing on.
This scene imagery wise was spectacular to me. I loved it because it actually shows Thoron being sort of swallowed by the gold floor. It was quite literal in a sense because obviously it's the gold swallowing you know, him up. But it's sort of like a quote-unquote dream sequence. I loved it. Did you like the scene?
No, I didn't.
What?
I didn't like that scene at all. I thought it was... There's a bunch of... While he did get this one in under 2 hours, or just over 2 hours, there was a bunch of things that I felt were stretching because at this point, you know, there was not much left. And in fact, he even inserted a whole extra scene, which while I thought was really cool between Cate Blanchett and the Nazgul, was completely not in the story whatsoever. Right. Anyway, but the scene at hand that you're discussing, it was unnecessary, blah, blah, blah. No, I didn't like it. It was well done. It just didn't really... We knew he was crazy, and yeah, he had to come out of it somehow, but I don't know.
The ending of the film, we see at one point Gandalf smoking a pipe alongside Bilbo. I think we all felt inside, you feel warm. Is that a great description of it? You almost feel like happy to see these characters sort of relieved, and it's not like necessarily a emotional moment between the two. They don't hug, but on screen, seeing him sort of clear his pipe and sitting there with Bilbo and knowing everything that has transpired and was going to happen with Frodo and the rest of the series, this particular scene, I thought, conveyed everything that we wanted to feel inside. You know, like I said, it made me feel like happy inside that it was Bilbo and Gandalf and the pipe. I loved it.
Absolute great scene. It sort of mirrors the first interaction between Gandalf and Bilbo from the first film, the Fellowship of the Ring, where they're sitting there in the Shire blowing smoke rings, you know? And Frodo liked his wizard weed too, by the way. Bilbo did. Yeah, it was a light moment in an otherwise completely action-packed and dramatic movie. So it was the only light moment, I believe. Yeah, it was nice. Of course, it brings a little bit of a warm, fuzzy feeling to your heart.
For sure. And then finally, the comparisons to Star Wars, the prequel, I think really came up the most when there is a scene in this film where they actually tell Legolas to go check out Strider, basically, in a nutshell.
Yeah.
And
by name, they just say...
They do say Strider. Yeah, he goes by the name of Strider.
His other name, you'll have to discover for yourself.
I did not like this scene at all. I thought like it was way too over the top and tried to connect the two series. It was unnecessary. And was there some great moment that I'm forgetting where Legolas meets Strider? No.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, they sort of meet him in the Inn of the Dancing Pony.
But there's nothing between Legolas and...
Not really.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I could be forgetting. It's been a couple of years since I've seen the original films, but...
It really seemed like Ben Kenobi taking over the twins at the very end of
Star Wars.
Same here, and I did not think at all that it was necessary.
I somewhat agree. So here's the question: Do you think it's over for Middle Earth, or do you think we'll go back?
I actually hope, fingers crossed, that it's over. But I've said this about the Bourne series. I've said this about many films where I think, hey, just leave it alone. But obviously, money talks, and I wouldn't be shocked if somewhere down the road, 10 years from now, we have like an offshoot of Middle Earth.
Well, what about the Silmarillion? That is a tough one to say. Silmarillion. That was the final book by J.R.R. Tolkien, and it's all about Middle Earth.
Why not, then?
They're going to do it.
No doubt. Couple of dislikes before we move on. The female elf here is played by the girl from Lost.
Evangeline Lilly.
Did you like her here? She's obviously a made-up character. Your thoughts on it?
Okay, so here's my thoughts on it. In the first two movies, I thought she was a complete waste of time. Although, you know, obvious eye candy, and she's always kind of fun. Like you were saying before, I finally connected to the characters, and she has a love interest with one of the dwarves, and I actually thought that was one of the more tender human moments, even though neither one of them are human, of the film. And so, yeah, I thought Evangeline Lilly was used very well in the third Hobbit movie, and I liked her in it.
And there's definitely a connection, you know, with her and also the Hobbits, and there are finally emotional moments where I felt a little choked up a couple times throughout the film, and she probably aided in that emotion.
Yeah, and they were able to convincingly retcon her out of the next trilogy, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, by banishing her from Rivendell. So,
no doubt.
Yeah. Okay, that explains that.
Well done. And the other thing, too, is that the ending battle, it reminded me, we've seen these battles in Middle Earth, and this is where I say that the series had a bout of fatigue. We've seen so many of these images before that it's not special anymore. And especially, here's this unbelievable battle to cap off the movie, and it's going to be one of the best in the series.
Yeah.
But we've seen humongous battles
4, 5, 6
times before. And so did you feel like at the end, it didn't have that special feeling like we saw it in Two Towers
Battle of Helm's Deep when Gandalf comes down the mountain?
Spectacular, right? And there's actually almost a moment like that because they're coming down the mountain. I don't know. I just didn't feel that like awe, that sense of adventure anymore.
I will say this, and I don't know if are we spoiling things here. Potential spoiler alert out there. When the eagles come, and they're dropping the bears like bombs, and the bears are running into the battle, I got a little chill from that. That was really, really cool. But I think where the battles suffer the most is the overuse of CG. Again, like in the original films, you know, the effects were there, obviously. The Weta Studios, whatever, they were built just to make these effects. But there were still practical actors, like the orcs were men in masks. And in this film, the orcs were completely CG, and I think that I couldn't relate to them much as villains or even be as afraid of them because they weren't real.
I agree. And also what happened inside those battle scenes that made them so special in Lord of the Rings was we had these particular characters inside this humongous battle, be it Legolas or be it Merry and Pippin, where we cared about the characters so much. not the case in the Hobbit films. It's this humongous battle scene, and there's very little connection to a particular character.
You know what? I just thought of something, though. When Bilbo, I did like how they cut away from Bilbo, because he gets into the battle, obviously, and he's somewhat outmatched, and he gets knocked unconscious. As soon as he goes out cold, they cut to somebody else, and then they go through that whole action sequence, and then they cut back to Bilbo just as he comes to, you know? I thought that was well done, and he is the one you care about.
He is. But do you know what I mean? Like, there's not enough, like, particulars, you know? Like, we're just seeing a mass battle going on, and we don't really actually care who dies at this point, you know? And there's not enough of that, like, scene on scene.
Right. There were no minor characters within the armies that you gave a crap about.
Right.
They were the armies, the generals, and that was about it. You cared about the generals somewhat, like the orc general, the elf general, obviously the dwarf general, and then the man, Bart.
And there is one fantastic scene that I'm going to mention in my top three. Finally cracked my top three moment in Middle Earth that took place during this battle. And I think you'll agree it was quite spectacular.
Nice. Okay.
So I give it a solid three Jaws.
Yeah.
And I think it left the series on a high note. You agree as well?
Yeah. Yeah, completely. Three Jaws.
Nice. So it got us thinking. When we saw this movie, we came out and we actually... me and Matt actually had a beer at a bar, and we said, hey, let's do a whole Lord of the Rings podcast and talk about our top three favorite Middle Earth scenes, because as we just started mentioning them, we were arguing, as we always do.
Yeah, as we always do, because you're an idiot.
And before we...
Sorry.
Okay, but let me just say this. Before we get to our top three, something had happened. We were recording maybe 3 weeks ago, and we did our... favorite movie Archers.
Yeah, it was
in honor of Katniss and the Hunger Games.
Right, right.
And you, okay, very seldom, Jawheads, do me and Matt even say what we're going to have. We never discuss our lists.
Never.
On this particular episode, because I knew Legolas would be mentioned, I turned to Matt and I said, hey, you can have Legolas. I'm not going to put him on my list. In my opinion, the number one movie Archer of all time, hands down. I would have put him at number one. I'm giving this to Matt. This is on a side note. And then Matt takes it and absolutely diarrhea of the mouth. You don't even put him at number one. I mean, you put Hawkeye above him.
Hawkeye.
And I was so pissed. And not only I was pissed, True Bromance.
Yeah.
A podcast that is out
there. It's Hiro and Barry. Yeah, sure.
We love these guys. Mm-hmm. They called you out on Twitter, and I love that they put it out there. And we could read some tweets. It was hilarious.
Go ahead and read some. Go ahead. You want to get into it. I'll defend myself after it.
All right. So on Twitter, True Bromance Podcast, and they are at True Bromance Podcast, called you out right away. Mm-hmm. Obviously, listening to the episode, they write out on Twitter, Hawkeye over Legolas, Matt K, that is a horrible pick. List is invalid. Hmm. All right. You list for some reason that Hawkeye would eat Legolas for lunch. They don't even know what the hell that means. And then...
No. That's not what they didn't know what it means. I said Legolas is an elf. And I think what I was going for there is that I think elves are kind of merry and dandy and delicate and feminine. And Hawkeye is a badass.
Also, DJ Valentine, who is at Trying to Be DJV on Twitter, he chimes in because he's looking at the conversation. He says, Legolas is more accurate and doesn't get tired. Meanwhile, Hawkeye gets tired. He misses first.
You know, and I think Hawkeye's a human being. It's like Batman.
So that said, a lot of Twitter feedback. Right. You talked at the bar that you were going to come on CinemaJaw and give a public apology.
Yes, I'd just like to apologize to all the fans. After seeing the last Hobbit film and witnessing Legolas in his glory, I realized, what was I thinking? How could I possibly say that Hawkeye... And again, listen, guys, we're talking about the screen versions of these characters. I think that I was more kind of thinking about Hawkeye from the comic books, who's great, not the Jeremy Renner piece of doo-doo that is put up on the screen in the Avengers film. There is no way that character is even close to being in the same ballpark. I mean, he's minor league AAA, and Legolas is Babe Ruth. And I let you guys down, Hiro, Barry, all the Jawheads. I was wrong.
Wow. Jawheads, if Elias should take a picture of me, I'm smiling from ear to ear. I love when Matt's wrong.
Hey, but at least I can admit it.
That's nice. That is good.
I'm taking one for the team here, guys, and I'm letting y'all know I was wrong. I take it back. Legolas is way better than Hawkeye.
Awesome.
There, I've said it.
Oh, man, cheers.
Cheers. Coffee.
Love it. Coffee. Yeah. All right, so it brings us to our top three favorite Middle-Earth moments, and these are from both the Lord of the Rings trilogy and the Hobbit film. Obviously, when you think back to the Lord of the Rings, you could pick up a million moments that are just spectacular. They touched us in a way that it seemed almost very relevant to say the first Star Wars films did. There, you can pick tons of scenes. So this was a very difficult list to come up with. Matt, you're getting a start at this week. Top three Middle-Earth. This could be Hobbit or Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. So my first pick takes place in the Two Towers, the second of the original trilogy, and it is the Wizard Duel. When Gandalf the Grey fights Saruman the White, he first discovers that Saruman has betrayed the Order and gone over to, I guess, the dark side, for lack of a better term. He is now one of Sauron's agents. He was using the Seeing Stone, I forget what the Middle-Earth term for it is. And Gandalf, that was Gandalf's first clue. And he's like, no, this is a bad thing. And he covers it up. And Saruman's like, why should we fear its power? You know, and you could just tell that he's been corrupted. And then he uses his magic to slam the doors as Gandalf tries to leave. And then it's on. It's on. And they're flipping each other around. This is the first time you get to see what powers these guys hold. You
right.
know? And it's Christopher Lee and Ian McKellen, too. Ancient guys. I mean, they're so old, and they're slamming each other into walls, and they're flipping him up on the ceiling. And I think ultimately Saruman gets the upper hand in the battle and locks Gandalf up in the top of the tower.
Right. That is a fantastic scene. I actually sort of forgot about that one. The Battle of the Wizards is awesome. I agree. And two, we were mentioning that Ian McKellen obviously has had a humongous career. Same with Christopher Lee. But yet, I think Christopher Lee especially, this is the character I would associate with him.
Well, that and Dracula.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. You can't take Dracula away.
It's amazing. My number three actually comes from the Hobbit series. It's the only one on my list. And it comes from this latest film. And I did not mention this particular scene when we reviewed it because I wanted to mention it on my top three. This is where Thoron is battling the main orc in the film. And they are on a sheet of ice. I shouldn't even say a sheet of ice. It's basically a frozen lake.
Yeah, frozen waterfall.
And basically, as the orc has this humongous like stone
ball and chain,
but it's actually just like a big brick at the end. You know, it's not like the quite literal ball, and it's this big brick, and he's swirling it around, and as he's missing him, or it goes around, it's breaking the ice constantly, so eventually they're actually on just floating icebergs, in a sense. Mm-hmm. That is also cut in with this scene that I mentioned, Legolas on the bridge, also fighting an orc, and it reminded me a little bit, comparisons again to Star Wars, the second film, where Yoda is fighting... Dare I say, it's Christopher Lee, isn't it?
No, it's not Christopher Lee.
No,
but he's fighting the Emperor, Emperor Palpatine.
Oh, yeah, he's fighting...
different actor.
No, but whatchamacallit is fighting...
Dooku? No, Dooku died in the beginning of the third film.
Oh, he did? No, yeah. This is the second film. So Dooku was fighting...
He was fighting Anakin and Obi-Wan.
Right.
And Yoda.
In the second one.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not crazy.
But what were they intercutting that with?
Well, in the second one... Oh, maybe it is the third one. Nah, I'm all confused. But there's that one where Yoda is fighting the Emperor.
Yeah.
And Dooku's fighting, I thought...
Dooku's dead at this point.
Anakin. Well...
The two things that are intercut there are Yoda fighting the Emperor and Obi-Wan fighting Anakin.
Oh, no. You're wrong.
No, I'm positive.
Are you?
Okay. Yep. Jaw box.
Throw it in the jaw box. Make sure that's what it is.
The final... it's in Revenge of the Sith.
I believe it's actually in the second film, but all right. Maybe I'm crazy here. But you know what I mean. There was a great interaction here between Legolas and the orc on the bridge, and then Thoron and the orc on the ice. For a little while there, it was like, wow, this is quite the spectacular scene. Finally, an action moment that I cared about what happened to both characters, and I think that's what was missing in the Hobbit films. I love this particular sequence.
Yeah, but you know that Legolas lives. There's no, he's never in danger in any of these films, because obviously...
But I'm not positive that Orlando Bloom lives.
Yeah. He does not look right.
No, he doesn't.
It's so much makeup. Jesus.
So that was my number three. Came from the Battle of the Five Armies.
Okay.
We're into our twos. What do you got there, man?
The barrel scene. Speaking of the Hobbit trilogy. I think the barrel scene from the second was the Desolation of Smog. Fantastic. I mean, this is the part of the book that everyone really likes, too. They make this great escape, and they go down the river in barrels. It's so, so amazing. And they're fighting orcs along the way, and you know what's in store for them, but such a great scene.
And it's fun. It has that, like, Indiana Jones adventure fun to it, right?
It really did.
And it needed it, because I think the first film was so drawn out. It took so long to get to sort of the adventure feel of The Lord of the Rings, which the first three had tenfold. Everything felt like an adventure and an awesome right. sequence. The first film did not supply that.
Because we'd been there. Right.
And then finally, it comes up in The Desolation of Smog, this barrel scene, and it was so needed.
I agree.
And so much fun. Again, heavy on the CGI a little bit. I got to go back and watch the scene. I remember being
at least it was really the actors in a floating barrel on at least a couple of the shots.
All right. I like it as number two. For my number two, could have been anybody's number one. Maybe one of the key sequences in the Middle Earth six films, and that is Gandalf, the Balrog. They come out.
The Balrog.
Balrog. I always saw the Balrog. No?
No, Balrog.
Balrog. You know how he says it? It's a Balrog.
Yeah, yeah.
And he comes across the bridge, and he puts down that staff, and it is so spectacular. He throws down the staff, and he says, "You shall not pass." Oh, wow. And the first time we saw, I mean, it's this like demon creature with the flames.
Yeah.
Oh, was it awesome.
This is your number two?
My number two. Could have been a number one.
Oh, yeah.
Easily could have been number one. But it was so spectacular. And obviously, we think at the time that maybe Gandalf died. People who've read the book obviously
well,
knew.
Well, he does die. He falls.
He falls.
Gandalf
and he becomes
gray.
Gandalf the White.
Right.
But even that part, when he's clutching for a second, and what does he say? Run, you fools.
Run, you fools.
Awesome.
And then Frodo's like, no!
Right. And for us, people, like, I have not read the books. It should be out there. So I had no clue.
You didn't know that Gandalf fell?
No, I have no idea. And I remember seeing it in the theater. Frodo obviously is very emotional. The whole group is emotional.
They're crying.
Oh, it's and it really hit you, you know, like you realized how much Gandalf meant to this group, and I just love
how much Gandalf meant to the world. I mean, really, at that moment after his death, there was hopelessness among the Fellowship. How can we complete this quest without Gandalf?
Right,
he was the most powerful of the bunch.
Yep.
So
that was my number two. Like I said, could have been a number one. What do you got sitting at number two?
At number two, I had the barrel scene. So we're into our number ones now.
Oh, we are.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
So, listen, if I was...
This is your number one scene.
This is my number one scene, and I could easily have given it to the You Shall Not Pass, but I think that there was a moment that you don't get a lot in these sword and sorcery films, and it was a girl power thing. It was when Eowyn is fighting the Ringwraith, the leader of the Nazgul, the Witch King of Angmar.
And this is in Return of the King.
This is in Return of the King. This is Sauron's second in command. He is a badass. And there's been a couple of times when they say, no man can kill him. You know, so they're fighting and the Witch King gets the better of Eowyn, and he's about to, you know, deliver the crushing blow, and Pippin jumps up and stabs him in the back of the leg, which gives her just enough time to get an advantage on him. And then he says, no man can kill me. And she takes off her helmet and she says, I am no man. She stabs him right in the face.
Awesome.
And then the way he dies was so cool, because he sort of implodes. Like you don't see a face underneath his helmet. There's just like blackness there. And his armor kind of like crunches in like a tin can. And then he dies and there's a bit of an explosion. Such a satisfying moment. And I think I remember you mentioned this, and I remember as well, like a lot of people just cheered at that moment, because poor Eowyn had sort of been jerked around by Aragorn, you know, like the affections thereof. And it would have been shitty if she was like left aside as this like, you know, jilted lover. But then she has this triumphant moment where she really saves the day.
She does.
I mean, that was the war winner right there.
That was awesome. A great scene. I'm glad you brought that one up, because it's probably not normally highlighted when you're thinking of great moments. So you take a second and you think back, and when you're talking about it there and the passion that you're talking about it is, right, I remember everybody cheering in the theater. Yeah. So awesome.
I am no man.
So cool.
Very cool.
Awesome. My number one, and it's tough to, when you're looking at the Lord of the Rings, to nail a number one scene, because there are a couple of, everybody's going to have
really,
their favorite, right?
Really curious here.
And I remember being very emotional when the entire kingdom bows to the hobbits. And Aragorn says, "My friends, you bow to no one," and everybody bows to him. I lost it. I literally lost it in the theater. I was like a wreck. You know, I was crying. I was like, what an awesome scene. Could have been my number one. Just wanted to mention that.
Oh, okay. That's just an honorable. Wow.
Just an honorable. My number one also hits me. I've went back and watched the series when it hits me in the heart the most is when Sam picks up Frodo.
Oh, sure.
Going up the mountain, and Frodo just can't do it anymore. And he says, "I can't carry the ring." He has this line where he says,
"What does Sam say?"
Yeah,
he says, "I cannot carry the ring," or something like this. But I can carry you.
And he puts him over his shoulder, and he brings him up the actual final steps of Mount Doom. From that point, I want to highlight that point all the way to the destruction of the ring when Gollum, so happy as...
bites off Frodo's fingers and he gets the ring back.
As it's falling down, what a spectacular scene. That entire sequence of the destruction of the ring from the time when Sam carries Frodo up to the final... It's been built up for so long.
Uh-huh.
To nail that scene was awesome because you really felt it.
And you see the evil in Frodo's eyes in that moment when Sam's like, "Do it, throw the ring in." And he just turns around and he says, "No." And like you realize that he's going to keep possession of the ring at that moment. And then luckily sort of Gollum saves the day. In a way, he was really the savior of Middle Earth. But the look on his face, which was such an achievement from a CG character, one of the best CG characters of all time. Of pure joy and ecstasy. Like he knows he's about to die and he doesn't give a shit.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
So great. So great. Those were our top three favorite scenes. I think we nailed some good ones there, Matt.
I agree. There's no doubt there's way more.
I'm sure. And that's why, Jawheads, if you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. Give us your favorite Lord of the Rings moment. We'll retweet it. Get the discussion going.
Hell yeah.
And on top of that, because we're such a giving podcast, Matt, we have Hobbit t-shirts. The first person that's listening to this and shoots us a CinemaJaw, "I want a Hobbit t-shirt," we're going to send it to you. So just shoot us a tweet and we'll send it to the first person that listens to this podcast.
We will mail it to your house.
Absolutely.
Or office.
Yes, we will. So what we're going to do is take a break. When we come back, Matt, you are going to take Elias on in 2014 flop movie trivia, plus a review of Reese Witherspoon's Wild. We'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
CinemaJaw is brought to you by Sorrentos. Our favorite musician, Sorrentos, has just dropped his 11th music video on YouTube. His musical style has been called an emotionally powerful vocal style, masterfully united with music that is a fusion of classic 80s rock blended with modern soft rock and pop music. You can see his new video and listen to all his music at melogia.com. That's melogia.com. And by Spectrum Safety Training. Spectrum provides occupational safety and health training, like food safety training for restaurant managers and food handlers, and OSHA workplace safety training as well. Prepare and prevent. Don't repair and repent. Call today to register into the next available classes. Call 847-780-8944 or visit spectrumsafetytraining.com for more info.
The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
If your nerve deny you, go above your nerve. Emily Dickinson and Cheryl Strayed.
Oh my God. What have I done?
I'm sorry you have to walk 1,000 miles just to...
Finish that sentence. Why do I have to walk 1,000 miles?
Happy trails, Cheryl.
Turn away from the sound of your own voice.
You get lonely.
I'm lonelier in my real life than I am out here.
Follow the Everlast.
Must have been some breakup, huh?
Breakup is sort of a shorthand. How much do I love you? I miss you. God, I miss you. My mother was the love of my life.
Come back!
You're using heroin, and you're having sex with anyone who asks.
About quit?
Only once every 2 minutes or so.
Well, I've quit a bunch of stuff. Quit jobs, quit marriages.
You regret any of them?
I didn't have a choice. There's never been a time when there was a fork in my road.
Here are some questions I've been asking myself. What if I forgive myself? What if I was sorry? But if I could go back in time, I wouldn't do a single thing differently. What if all those things I did were the things that got me here?
Turn away.
Reese Witherspoon stars in this movie based on the true story of Cheryl Strayed, a woman who walked the entire Pacific Crest Trail, which goes from the Mexico border to the Canadian border and is over 1,100 miles. The film opens with Witherspoon already on the trail, examining her feet, which have blisters and toenails falling off of them. After one of her shoes falls down a ravine, she gives a wild scream as she throws the other one away. I mention this scene, Matt, because it is vital to the film's success. Are we actually going to believe that pretty little Reese Witherspoon can play a character that will not give up on hiking for over 3 months, sleeping, eating, surviving in the wild by herself? The answer is yes. The good news is there's a lot more to the film than watching someone hike the whole entire time. The film flashes back to a happier time in Cheryl's life when she was living with her mother, played by Laura Dern. The flashbacks jump around a bit. We also get a glimpse of her failed marriage, her use of heavy drugs, and her days of sleeping around with various men. What led her down this path is slowly revealed, and we understand why she is currently on this journey. The story is ultimately about how we grieve, how we sometimes need space to find ourselves, to find a path in life again. Witherspoon was tremendous, but I also need to highlight Laura Dern, whose character is vital to understanding Cheryl's state of mind. Dern proves once again she is one of the best supporting actresses working today. Both will more than likely see Oscar nominations for their work. I also want to highlight Martin Pensa. Who's this, Matt? Who is Martin Pensa?
Who is Martin Pensa?
He is the film's editor, and he needs to be mentioned for his great work here. So many times a film suffers by not being able to convey the struggles of a long journey. From setting up a tent, to eating the same thing constantly, to bathing. Here, the film is able to put together in a way that we understand how difficult Witherspoon's journey was here, and yet it did not spend too much time dwelling over it. Bravo! I loved it. It needed to be highlighted here. When the credits roll on this one, Matt, I found my feet aching and my heart pumping. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, 3.25 Jaws for Wild.
Now, the last time, listen, I don't mean to be shallow, but I have to ask you about the last time we were discussing this film. Mac sort of dropped the bombshell on us, Mac from the Midwest Independent Film Fest, that Reese Witherspoon goes nude.
She does.
Yeah, okay.
And as I mentioned in my review, there's flashback sequences of her...
Sleeping around.
Okay. And I had... drawn comparisons to a film earlier in this year, one of my favorites, Under the Skin with Scarlett Johansson.
Sure, yeah.
Everybody was so excited when you know, males here out, you know, excited.
Yeah, it's okay.
Oh my, well, so-and-so is going to be naked in this movie. This is going to be great. But it likewise, in that movie, it's not done in a very sexual way. And it's actually in a sad sense. So when you do see Reese Witherspoon naked various times, you see Reese's Pieces, it's not wow, oh my god, let's stop everything and, you know, pause it. It actually comes across as very almost sad moment in the movie. So
okay,
sorry.
Yeah, but out of context, did she look good?
Oh, she looked great. Yeah, no tits.
That's what I was really getting at, right?
Yeah, but and two, I know the SAG nominations came out, the Golden Globe nominations came out. It's becoming award season. Reese Witherspoon, I for sure is a lock. Laura Dern, I think, is a lock.
You think
here.
She's a lock for an Oscar?
Not to win, but okay. a nomination.
A nomination. It's just, okay.
She carries the entire movie. I mean, you're watching this person hike and
yeah
on screen for. Almost.
Everyone's doing these movies now where it's just them for the entire movie.
Yes.
Like ever since the one on the boat with
Tom Hanks.
Not Tom Hanks.
Oh.
Oh
yeah, Robert Redford.
Thank you. Jeez, yes. Brain fart. Mr. Yeah, Robert Redford.
All is
and then
lost.
Tom Hardy did the one in the car.
Yep, lock.
And then I think this is just kind of the trend now. Yeah.
This one does have a lot of flashbacks, so it's not always her, and that's why I mentioned the editing of the film is here's this humongous journey. You get that feel, right? You feel her eating the same thing and how terrible that would be. And at one point, she doesn't have the right proper gas to turn on the her little grill, you know. So she's eating this like mush, just basically cold, you know. And they do it in a sequence where it's like boom, 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 boom. They show it really fast. You get the idea, like bah, she's been eating this thing for like 5 days, but it's not.
Mm-hmm. They don't clobber you with it.
Right. I loved it. Also, I wanted to mention, like I had said, Laura Dern, spectacular. So worthy to check it out. I think probably the only thing keeping it from a four-jaw movie was I didn't feel as emotionally connected to her journey as I thought I would going in. And obviously, there's I don't want to give a total spoiler away on why she's doing this and what set her down this path as it's slowly revealed. But I thought when I found out why it was, it would hit me a little bit more, and it didn't. I'm not saying I wasn't cold to it. I liked it, but I thought like, wow, for a movie like this, I thought I would be really over the top and slightly off. That's the only reason keeping it from four jaws, but okay. The performances alone, check it out.
I really want to check this one out.
Yep. 3.25 jaws for Wild. It is playing in limited release. I'm sure it's opening up around the country. Matt, before we get to trivia, and you're taking on Elias, you made some just ridiculous statements about how you beat Elias.
Undefeated.
It's so silly. We threw a couple items into the jaw box. I'm sure Elias.
Let's drag him out.
Yeah. Let's open up that jaw box.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
We got a box. What's in the box?
What's going on, guys? I didn't have enough time to look up how many times I beat Matt, but I'm sure the loyal jawheads know. So I'm gonna go to my lawyer because Matt, you're for defamation of my name. But I've been going to my lawyer a lot lately.
Whoa.
Yeah, I've been going to my lawyer a lot lately. You know how Sony got hacked? Well, I got hacked. It was crazy. Like my social security number has been used. That was weird though because like a week ago Matt asked for my social security. Anyway, like I have a new credit card.
Just trying to get insurance in the jaw box.
There's a new credit card open up in my name, and apparently like this person bought nothing but Slinkies. So I don't know what was going on. But Matt, you've been doing experiments with Slinkies too, right? That's just a coincidence.
Just a coincidence.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to.
The two have nothing to do with one another.
I'm shocked it was Slinkies.
Just wanted to clear that up. Yeah.
Well, they're fun for a girl or a boy, right?
Well, let's just jump in here, huh? Let's see. The original name of The Hobbit, the third movie, was There and Back Again.
Oh, so it did actually have a title. I did not know that. You were right. So
it was originally going to be There and Back Again.
Yes.
And then they switched it to The Battle of the Five Armies.
Much better.
Interesting.
Much better title.
You really? I wouldn't say that.
Given the context of what actually happens in that movie, I think The Battle of the Five Armies is a way better title.
Well, it's quite literal. I mean, I don't know.
There and Back Again was the name of Bilbo's book.
Right. So. I think that would have ended it nicely.
Let's see. And the master's assistant was named Alfred Lickspittle. Is that right?
Yeah, it sounds right.
Alfred.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that wasn't Wormtongue.
He didn't go on to become the Wormtongue?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Heck of a unibrow, though.
What is... that character was a total waste. There was nothing... No... Yeah.
Hey, you got to fill a movie, Matt. You got to put in some characters.
And the last one, again, Matt was right, Rye. It was The Revenge of the Sith.
Ah, yes, yes. And I Matt mentioned in the break that it is because the Emperor finally reveals himself, which is in the third film. Right. Silly me.
Of
Silly
course.
Me. Yeah.
Yep.
Was that it?
That's all.
All right. Get back in that Jawbox and actually stay out of the Jawbox.
All right.
You're taking Matt out in trivia. And it's funny because, Elias, your honest opinion, I know you didn't look it up. You've probably played Matt 6, 7, 8 times maybe.
I'm pretty sure I lost twice. Yeah, so that would be like six wins, at least
twice.
You clearly have a winning record against me.
Yes, definitely.
All right. So 2014 is coming to an end. We thought it would be fun to start highlighting some of the 2014 lists. And
Let's do it.
Our first 2014 trivia. We are playing 2014 flop trivia. So these are movies that did not do well. We all thought they might, and they did not. It works like this. Matt, you will be taking on Elias. Elias, because you're our engineer, you get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals if you don't know it, and if you get hung up on one question, Rye, the movie guy, has clues to all the questions. You get one trip to...
Rescue me, Ryan Land?
Yes. You want to go first, Elias?
Yeah, I'll go first.
All right, question number one over to Elias. Mr. Makeup, Johnny Depp, wore no makeup in this 2014 flop that saw him turn into artificial intelligence.
Oh, man. I see the poster in my head, but I just cannot pick out the title.
I take it no one saw this one?
Well, probably a lot of these we haven't seen. Robot guy, that's my guess.
I know the answer.
You do?
Yeah. Transcendence.
Wow. 1-0, Matt K.
This is not going
to
be good.
Question number two over to Matt. Let's be honest here, Matt. I, Frankenstein, sucked. Who starred as Adam, the creature in the film, the main actor in I, Frankenstein?
Is it Aaron Eckhart?
Oh, boy.
Yes. Wow. Yes.
We leave
it to flop movie trivia for Matt to finally be good. It is 2-0, Matt K. Question number three over to Elias. Kevin Smith had his worst box office outing ever with Tusk. What actor starred as Wallace Brighton, the podcaster who goes missing in the woods?
Oh, my God. Hold on a second. I am having a brain fart right now. Oh my God, and I know Matt knows it too.
And you went and saw Tusk, I believe. You were one of the five people.
Yes, I was. Oh my God.
Holy cow. Just give him a second. Oh boy, Elias.
I see Matt petting his goatee over there. It's intimidating.
I always do that.
My honest opinion, Matt does not know this one, but I know that you know it for sure, Elias.
Yeah.
It's early in the morning.
Oh my God.
He's had a couple Bloody Marys already.
Who starred in Tusk?
I'm going to take a Rescue Me because there's no way I can't. Yeah. I can't not get this one, especially this early if I go down 3-2.
Wow. Rescue Me, Ryan. Question number three. What's that clue there, Ryan? Here's your clue, Elias. He has a very long name.
Justin Long. Damn.
He was even giving you another hint. He was saying, just think about it. I knew immediately the name was Justin.
Yeah. Okay, well.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Elias is on the board. It is 2-1. Matt still in the lead. Question number four over to you, Matt. Seth MacFarlane teamed up with Charlize Theron for this film that was not nearly as successful as Ted. Name it.
I know that it was... Okay, Seth MacFarlane.
Charlize Theron.
That was not nearly as successful as Ted.
Came out this summer.
It was A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Damn, I knew that.
3-1, Matt K. He's perfect. We got to play flop trivia more often.
Hey,
for you.
How about it?
Question five over to Elias. 2014 gave us just what we need. Another Jack Ryan movie, Shadow Recruit. Who starred as Jack Ryan this time around, Elias?
I don't know. I'm going to say Jeremy Reynolds. Is that even a name?
You mean Jeremy Renner?
Renner.
Incorrect. Matt, you got a guess?
Who was Jack Ryan in the latest one?
Correct.
geez, man. I know Ben Affleck had a turn as Jack Ryan, right? Was it Ben Affleck? Who? Yeah, I forget.
Wow, we were looking for Chris Pine. Chris Pine.
Okay, that's right. Yeah.
I'm not positive. I reviewed this film on the Jaw, but I have seen it, and it's 1.5 Jaws at absolute best. Stay away from this thing. Also in that movie, Kevin Costner, he plays sort of like the older agent in the movie. Just stay away from it. Junk. All right. Still 3-1, Matt K. Question number 6 is over to him. You can blow this thing wide open here, Matt. Hercules was not so strong at the box office this summer. What actor starred as the Greek legend?
All right. There were two Hercules movies, and I'm pretty sure...
And I'm going to give you a hint right off the bat. It is not Steve Carell.
Thank you. Dude, was it Dwayne Johnson? The Rock?
Oh, man.
Wow. He's unbeatable here.
Can you smell what Matt K is cooking?
4-1, Matt K. You got to answer everything here. It might be over. Question 7, over to you, Elias. Arnold Schwarzenegger made his comeback starring alongside Sam Worthington in this film about an elite DEA task force being killed off one by one by a drug cartel. Name that film.
I'm just going to say Expendables 3.
Any guess here, Matt?
Yeah, that one with the school bus in the trailer. It was Arnold Schwarzenegger in, I don't remember. It was Kindergarten Cop 2.
Good guess, though. Good guess. Yeah. We were looking for Sabotage. Sabotage.
Sabotage.
All right. Still 4-1, Matt K. And the last question is over to him. Matt, what actor starred in the film Left Behind, which involved a small group of survivors left behind after millions of people suddenly vanish and the world is plunged into chaos and destruction?
I might as well use my rescue. Rescue Me, Ryan.
Oh, question number 8. Rescue Me, Ryan. All right, what the heck is the clue, Ryan? Oh, Matt, your clue is...
What are you, Gollum over there talking to yourself?
It's clue, precious.
Hey, I love that scene. That's fantastic. Your clue is this guy has been drunk in Vegas.
Nicolas Cage?
Destroyed.
Wow, 5-1.
Still undefeated. Wow. Still undefeated. Matt, can you believe
Matt's new nickname is the Floppinator.
My perfect record goes unblemished.
Holy cow. Matt K. I know you have your critics out on Twitter. Yeah. We're always giving you a hard time on trivia a lot of times, but he wins this one 5-1. Clobbered Elias. Wow.
I know my crap.
If for some reason there was a tie, we would have threw this question over to you, Elias. Which 2014 film was worse? And I think me and you both saw both of these films together. Tammy or Blended?
Oh, I have to go Tammy.
It was Blended, actually. It was Blended.
Oh, boy. Both. I'm going to defend that to the end of the year, and then I'm done.
Both terrible films. Stay away from them. The real jawbreaker was this. Age of the Rock, Dwayne Johnson, closest to.
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, go ahead. Sure.
I don't. Has he hit 40? Yeah, he must be in his 40s. I would say he is 43.
All right. Lock him in at 43, Elias.
I'll say 38.
Give that one to Matt. You're on a roll. 42.
Oh, man.
Wow. Ugh. All right.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Holy cow.
Winning trivia, winning cinema wars. Wow. I'm unbeatable.
Yeah, you are. You are unstoppable.
Still
at this point.
Still undefeated against the Lions.
No, he is not, Jawheads. Rumors. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you're absolutely on a roll, Matt. And it's probably sorry for you to see Cinema Jaw come to an end.
Yeah.
With the role that you're on.
I know. It's triumphant Cinema Jaw, but, you know, all good things.
Put on your hairy feet. Go back to Middle Earth.
I am.
Boy, oh boy. Elias,
my feet are hairy for a reason. I don't want to get into it, though.
And stinky.
Yeah, it happens.
It does.
Once in a while. Yeah. Now 3 times.
I'm a werewolf, is what I'm trying to say.
So remember, Jawheads, the first person who tweets us, I want a Hobbit t-shirt, we're sending one to you. So just shoot us a tweet, @CinemaJaw, and you'll get a free t-shirt.
Boom, that simple.
that easy. I hate to see these end, Matt, but we got to thank our sponsors.
Yeah, thanks to everybody that supported the show, and also thanks to the New 400.
Yeah, definitely check out what's playing at the New 400 at their website, thenew400.com.
Yeah.
We also have to thank the best engineer in the biz, Elias Rodriguez.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Elias.
Hairy feet, Elias.
Hairy feet.
Until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on showing about the movies.
Robot guy, that's my guess.
Uh-oh. This is a moment.
Oh, man.
I told you we should have recorded them.
Wow.
Uh-oh. Hold on. That works.
Play a couple different ones just to maybe get out the kinks. Disaster. That's crazy. You can pull it from an old episode.
That actually sounds okay, though.
That'll be fine. Just use that for now. Ready?